We're holding on Memvov Amud Beis, 12 lines from 11, 10 lines rather from the bottom. Yibori Lahu Hesveda. So we were discussing the Mishnah had mentioned about the fact that a person who was executed by Beis Din, they don't do regular avelos for him. And that gets us into a general discussion. But on the other hand, we said we bury him, and the burial is part of his kapara, which therefore he's not buried together with his ancestors until the blood, until the flesh is completely decayed. So the last thing we learned was the question of what is fundamentally the whole concept of burial. B'chalal, we said the concept that you have to bury a mess on the day that he passed away, unless you're leaving over the mess for his kavod, for example, because they need an order or tachrichim or whatever for him, is also a part of the loisa. So we said there is a mitzvah to bury the mess. So we started learning yesterday. So what's the fundamental idea behind the mitzvah to bury a mess? Is it basically an idea of to avoid bizoyin, because the body is going to rot and it would be a bizoyin for himself or for his family? Or is it a matter of covered for the mess? So now the Gemara continues in the same vein. Yibori Lahu, Hespeda, what about the Hesped, the fact that people cry and mourn for him? Well, the word Hesped has a and then nowadays it has a narrower meaning, which is the speeches that they give by the speeches that they give by Levaya to arouse people's emotions to get them to cry. Minhag Chabad is we don't do hespedim by the Levaya, but in any case, so hesped more generally means the crying and mourning for him. So the question is, this concept, Yakra d'chaye havi, is it basically for the honor of the living, for the honor of the relatives of the mess, or Yakra d'shachvi havi, or is it basically because of covered for the is it basically because of covered for the mess himself, meaning that covered for the mess in the sense that people will learn from what he accomplished in life, and that will be that itself will be a schus for his neshama. So the Gemara says, "L'mayi nafkamina." Well, what's the practical difference? And the answer is similar to what we learned yesterday, where a person says, "Don't bury me." So what about if he says, "Lo tispedu alahu gavra"? Don't make a hesped for me. So if it's a matter of his own covered, then sure he can forego his own covered. But if it's a matter of covered for his relatives, then no, he doesn't have the ability to forego that. Inami, another possibility, la puki mi yoshin. Another question would be whether we take money for that from the yoshin. People who are going to give a hesped, however it is, whether it's a speech or whether, as we find in the times of the Gemara, they would say something like they would say a poem that would capture the gravity of the moment, so people would cry about it. You find in Gemaras where they'd have flutes, for example, where they'd play a sad tune in order to motivate people to cry, etc. So all those kinds of things. Somebody needs to mute themselves. So all those kinds of things are included in this concept of hesped, and they cost money. So the question is, would we make the Yoshim pay for it? They might say, if it's a matter if it's a matter of honor for the mess himself, well, listen, he said that we shouldn't, so therefore we have to listen to him. But if he says, if he didn't say anything about like that, he doesn't imply that he doesn't want a hesped. But the Yoshim are saying, you know what? We don't need it. We don't care about that covered. Then nevertheless, we still say. Well, so Rashi explains like this, actually. If it's Yakra d'shachvi, if it's primarily for the covered a mess, then yes, if he himself says, I don't want it, then fine, we may not be obligated to. But if he didn't say, but now the Yoshim say, you know what, we want to forego it, then no, you don't have the right to forego the honor for your mess, for your relative. On the other hand, if it's a matter of covered for the living, then the other way around. If he says, don't be masvid me, then we don't have to listen to him. But if the Yoshim say we don't want, then we should have to listen to them because they're saying we're willing to forego our covered. So that would be the nafkamina. The Yad Ramah brings that, but he brings another way of looking at it as well. That you could say that if he and what if he didn't leave a Yerusha at all? Would we still say that? Would we still say that the Yoshim have to pay out of their own pocket for the Hesped? But if it's covered a mess, then no. If he didn't leave a Yerusha, they shouldn't need to. Okay, so the Gemara goes through several psukim where we see that a Hesped was done. Toshma, Vayover Avraham lispered the Sarah v'lev Kaisa. The Pasuk says Avraham came to mourn for Sarah and to cry for her. The Vayova, as we know from the Psukim over there, is that Avraham had been by the Akedah, and then he came from there too and found that Sarah had passed away. So that means, in other words, that they waited until Avraham came. The Amit Mishum Yakrid Chayiv, who, if you're going to say that mainly the Hesped is for the covered of the living, so the question would be, Mishum Yakrid Avraham Mashu Lo Sarah, why would they delay Sarah's burial because of Avraham's covered? So doesn't that show that the Hesped is for the covered Ames himself or herself? So in this case, they have to wait with the burial until Avraham is able to come and give the Hesped about her. Now Marshall points out, wait a minute, they need to wait with the burial until he bought a burial plot, as we have in the whole Parshas Chayei Sarah, at the beginning of Parshas Chayei Sarah over there. Fine, but the point is that since the Pasuk makes a point of saying Vayovay Avraham, that Avraham came, if it wasn't for the fact that they actually delayed things until he came, then it shouldn't have said, didn't have to say Vayovay in the first place. And in fact, so didn't have to say Vayova in the first place. So that tells us it could have just said Vayispoed Vayivker or whatever. So that implies, in other words, that they're waiting until he comes. And as far as a place for burial, then again, it doesn't have to mention his coming in connection with the Hesped at all. It would say something like Vayova Avraham Likbara Sarah, and he couldn't find a burial place for her, etc. The fact that it says the Vayova Avraham in the first place, that it says that he came, implying that he was elsewhere and they were waiting for him, and then it continues, Lispered the Sarah Valivkosa, shows that they were waiting for him to come and make the Hesped for Sarah. Meaning, in other words, so wouldn't that show that it's honor for the mess themselves, and therefore it's part of the honor of Sarah for them to wait until her husband comes? By the way, it mentions in the Medrash that the Hesped that Avraham said for her is Eishes Chayil, that we say on Friday nights. Anyway. So the answer is no. Sarah Gufa Nichola Kehechad Yaakov Avraham. No, because you would say that Sarah herself would have wanted it this way, that Avraham should be able to get covered through her. So that doesn't show, though, that in a situation where, as we were saying, a person says, I don't want you to be masvid me, whether they should or not, that we can't prove from that one way or the other. All right, the Gemara says, Toshma, we'll bring a proof from a pasuk that we discussed yesterday in connection with Yerovam's son. To recap, Yerovam had a son, Aviah, who was very sick. Yerovam sends, this is the first Yerovam, the king of the Aseret HaShevatim, sends his wife in disguise to Achiah Shiloni to ask whether the boy will recover. And Achiah gives her a very harsh nevuah from Hashem that, on the contrary, the whole family is going to be destroyed because of the Averis of Yerovam. But the Navi tells her that this one boy will be the only exception. The whole Jewish people will mourn for him and bury him, as opposed to the rest of the family are not going to have proper burial. Now, the Amit Mishum Yakrid Chayehu, if you're going to tell me that the Hesped is for the covered of the living, Hanach Bnei Yekora Ninhu, are his family, the family of Yerovam, Rishoyim, do they deserve that kind of covered? And the answer is, yeah, you could say Nichalu L'Tzadikaya Demi Yakri Bahu Inchi. Yeah, maybe the Tzadikim would prefer that people get covered through them, even if it means Rishoyim as well. So maybe, in other words, this Aviah, and the Pasuk mentions over there something good that he did, or it implies something good that he did, the Chazal teach out, then he would want this kind of thing, that they should get covered through him. Doesn't show, again, if he explicitly says he doesn't want, we can't prove one way or the other. Toshma, we'll bring another proof from another thing that we brought in the previous part of the Sugya, where the Navi Yirmiyah warns the people before Churban Bayis Rishon that the people who are going to die during the battle and during the epidemic and whenever preceding the Churban Bayis Rishon, lo yisoftu v'lo yikavru, the Pasuk says they won't be mourned for and they won't be buried. So now, if the Hesped is for the covered of the living, not everybody there was Rishoyim, there were Tzaddikim among them as well, shouldn't we be doing the Hesped for the sake of their covered? And the answer is, on the contrary, you could say, L'nichol Tzaddikaya D'miyakri B'rashiyaya. On the contrary, you could say that Tzaddikim are not going to want to receive covered through their relatives, the Rishoyim, and therefore, in other words, so you could say, the Pasuk is saying, they won't receive that covered, but fine, they don't want it anyway. All right, Toshma, the Gemara says, let's try to bring another proof. This is also from Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah is trying to convince Tzidkiyahu, the last king of Yehuda, to surrender to Nebuchadnezzar and his army rather than continuing to fight, and eventually then there's going to be a Churban and a Golos. So he tells him that he tells him you're not even if you don't surrender, then you're going to be captured by Nebuchadnezzar and blinded, etc., etc. And then he tells him, nevertheless, B'shalom Tomus, you will die in peace, which means that actually Nebuchadnezzar outlived, which means that actually Zedekiah outlived Nebuchadnezzar. He was in jail, but he still got to see Nebuchadnezzar die. Over Yisrafulach, they're going to do the same kind of burning for you as they did for your ancestors, the previous kings. We'll learn in Masechta later this year, Be'ez Hashem, that when a king would die, they would burn his personal effects. They would burn his. They would burn certain things that he had used during his lifetime as a siman, as a covered for him. That it means that nobody else can use him. So Yirmiyah tells him they will still give you that honor, even though you're going to live out most of your life as a prisoner in Babel. Nevertheless, when you pass away, the Jews there are going to give you this kind of covered. V'hoi odon yispedulach, and they're going to say a hesped on you and say, hoi odon, woe, our master has passed away. So we see that a hesped is being done. If you're going to say it's only who, if you're going to say it's only a matter of covet of the living, my nafkaleminay, then why would Zedekiah care? Why is this part of something that that Yirmiyahu has to tell him to try to tell him that one way or the other you're not going to be killed by Nebuchadnezzar and you're going to have an honorable burial? And the answer is Hachikamalei. That's what Yirmiyah means. Likru just like the Jewish people had covered by your ancestors when they passed away, that they did a hesped for them, and we're saying the hesped is maybe for the covered of the living. So therefore, so you should know, you Tzidkiyahu are going to benefit from that as well. But doesn't mean, in other words, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily so much of a covered for the mess. It's rather a covered for the living, as we're saying. Okay, Tosfos does point out actually that when it comes to when it comes to a king, then there's much more of a bizoyan if the hesped is not done properly. So that would also be a reason anyway to say that even if we say it's Yakra de Shachvi, still for a king, it's a tremendous bizoyan if there's no hesped at all. All right, the Gemara says Toshma, let's try to bring another proof. The Pasuk says in Tillin, listing the different good midos that a servant of Hashem should do, and it goes through 11 good midos. So one of them is Nivza Be'en of Nimas. The one who's contemptible is disgusting in his eyes. There's a few different ways of learning the exact meaning of the pasuk, but one meaning of it is, in other words, that you have someone who so Rashi over here explains it means nivze means he himself the tzaddik himself acts in a way and allows himself to undergo bizoyin be'enav in his own eyes nimas and he makes himself disgusting for the sake of a kiddush Hashem. Different other Mefarshim explain it can also mean that the Nivze is to his the one who is degraded, one who is worthy of degradation is disgusting in his eyes, or the other way around, whatever the point is. In other words, that it means that you're talking about a tzaddik who's willing to himself be degraded or to degrade the Rasha for the honor of Hashem. So what's an example of that? Zechizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. So an example would be King Chizkiyahu Shegiras Atzmais Aviv Al Mitesh HaVolin. He had his father's bones. Achaz, his father, was a tremendous Rasha, and he had him dragged around Al Mitesh HaVolin on a bed made out of ropes, meaning, of course, a king, normally you wouldn't treat his body this way. But here, when Achaz, the great Rasha, passed away, then Chizkiyahu did that. He had the body dragged around the city on a bed of ropes and then brought to burial that way. And the point was, it would be the point was that it was something of a kapara for Ochaz. In fact, the Mishnah in Psachim mentions that this is one of six unusual. It's one of three unusual things that Chizkiyahu did, which the Chachamim agreed with him. So in other words, Rashi says he wasn't concerned about his own kavod, that he wasn't concerned about his own kavod or about the kavod of Chizkiyahu. As far as the covered, as far as the covered for his, I mean, the covered of Achaz, the fact that he didn't give covered to his father, fine. His father is a Rosha, and he's not obligated to give him covered as a Rosha, but himself as a son, it would be a bizoyan for him that his father is being treated that way, but he didn't care about that. Now, v'i mishum yakra d'chayehu, if you're going to tell me that the hesped is for the sake of the covered of the living, my timer, then how could he be mevaza? How could he be mevaza? Everybody else, because he wants to do this to Ochaz. And the answer is, ki hech d'tevel kapara l'avua. So you could say, because he did it for kapara for his father. The question is, okay, but is that a reason to override the covered of the Jewish people? And the answer is Yisrael Gufayu Nichol. Yes, you could say the Jewish people themselves wanted that kind of thing. The Michli Yakrayu Lagabe, they want Ochos to have a kapara, and therefore they're willing to be Merchel on his covered. In fact, it worked to some extent because later on in the Masechta, when we talk about in the last Perek, the people that Ein Lahem Chelek Le'elam Abba, and it mentions a few of the kings who were Rishoyim, Ochos is not on that list. And one reason he's not on that list is because of this bizoyan that Chizkiyahu did for him. So that helped save him. That helped save him to some extent. Okay. The Gemara says, so we still don't have a proof from that one way or the other, whether it's covered for the living or for the dead. You could say that maybe it's primarily covered for the living. But in this case, they would be willing to forego that so that Ochaz can have his kapara. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring another proof. When Rebbe passed away, we had this very recently in Ein Yaakov as well, when Rebbe passed away, he gave instructions for his burial and so forth, and he gave instructions, Altis Speduni Ba'ayoris. One of his instructions was, don't make the hesped for me in the medium-sized towns. Now, they're carrying his Oren from one place to another. Rashi mentions, based on the Gemara over there, he passed away in the city of Tzipori, and they brought him to burial in the city of Beis Sha'arim. So they're going to be going on the road to bring him to burial. So Rebbe had given instructions, don't make the hesped in the little cities that you're going to pass through, only in the big cities. And the reason is, the Gemara explains over there, many more people will gather in the big cities and there'll be a greater covered over there during the hesped. The Amit Yakra Dechaye, if you're going to say that it's a matter of covered for the living, my nafka lemina, then why does it matter to Rebbe? And the answer is, that's just it. Kasava l'syakru be'yisrael tvei. Let the Jewish people have greater covered with me, and there's greater covered when you have a greater number of people by the hesped. So you could say that Rebbe wasn't looking out for his own covered, rather he's looking out for the covered of the Jewish people. All right, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's get back to our Mishnah. We said, Halinoi l'chvoidoi, if he left over the mess overnight for his covered, l'havi l'orim tachrichin, for example, because we need to get an orim tachrichin for the mess, eina over olav, then you're not over on the iser to leave the body buried, to leave the body unburied overnight. So we said, eina over olav, the Mishnah had said that you're not over on the iser. My love, l'chvoidoi shall mess. Now, when we say halinoi l'chvoidoi, it sounds like we mean we left him over for the covered of the mess. So, meaning, in other words, that means whatever we do during the hesped, the burial, and all of that is in fact for the covered of the mess. So, here in the previous piece of Gemara that we learned yesterday, the Gemara had started discussing the question whether the burial is primarily true for because of a lack of because so there shouldn't be bizoyan for the mess, or is it a matter of kapara? And then we left that unanswered, and now we're going to the matter of hesped. But we see on the face of it, everything that it's involved with the burial, including the hesped, including the burial itself, is all a matter of the covered of the is all a matter of the covered of the mess. And therefore, the Mishnah is saying if it'll be greater covered for the mess by delaying the burial until the Oren and Tachrichen are available, then you're not over. So the Gemara says, no, hochi karma. No, because you could say it means kola oisel chavoda shochai. No, because it can mean just the opposite. It can mean whatever you're doing for the honor of the living, ain't by bizoyin la mess, and it's not considered bizoyin for the mess to delay the levaya because of that. So no proof one way or the other whether the hesped is primarily for the honor of the living or the dead. Well, the Gemara says, it looks like I skipped a few lines. Sorry. Toshma, helina l'chvoidu l'havi l'orim tachrichin. So if they left him overnight to bring an orim tachrichin, ain't over all of them, we're not over. My lav l'chvoidu shal mes. And the answer is no, lo l'chvoidu shal chai. No, it means that we're leaving him over for the honor of the living. In other words, the living themselves, the relatives, are going to have greater covered if we wait until orim tachrichin are available. So the question is, so what are you telling me? Because of the honor of the living, we're going to delay the burial of the dead? How is such a thing mutter? And the answer is, yes. Because after all, where do we get this whole concept from? We said, because we have a lav in the Torah that when a person's body is hanged by Beis Din after Skila, And you're not allowed to leave the body overnight on the on the gallows, on the pole. So we learn from that, dumya de tolu, only when it's similar to a case where a person was hanged. De isbe bizoyan, where they're keeping him unburied is a bizoyan because it seems like they just abandoned him over there. Aval hocha, but over here, given the less they be given the less bizoyan, the fact is there's no bizoyan over here because it's clear we're doing it for covered. Fine, maybe not covered of the mess, it's covered for the living, but nevertheless, that's still not a matter of bizoyan. So loy, so you could say that that's not a problem. Okay, so the Gemara says Toshma, let's prove, rather than from the Mishnah, where we said Halinu l'chavoydo, where we said we left him for his kavod to bring an Aron Tachrichim, and we said the kavod over there can actually be the kavod of the living, but a Braisa says more clearly, Toshma, Halinu l'chavoydo, if you left over the mess overnight, and it was for the kavod of the mess, l'shamea olav ayoros, in order to gather together people from the cities to be there at the time of the Levaya, so there'll be a bigger crowd. L'shamea, Rashi points out, you have an expression in the Pasuk, Vayishama Shol, when it comes to the battle with Amalek, that Shol gathered together all the people. L'shamea literally means to make them hear, because that's how you assemble people, is by announcing. Anyway, so if you're doing it in order to announce that people should come to Levaya, or Lahavi lo mekoninos, or in order to bring the women who will cry and do other things, they would have by Levaya in those times, they would have like that. They would have professional groups of women who would say things. They would say responsively various kinds of things in order to arouse everyone's emotions. So that was also an important part of it. That was an important part of the Levaya as well. Or lahavila oran tachrichin, or they're delaying the burial to bring him an oran tachrichin. Over all of them, in those cases, you're not over. Because whenever a person is doing these things, is only for the covet of the mess. So we see, therefore, that the Braisa is clearly saying. Now, the Mishnah, you could say when it said l'chvoydo, it meant the covered of the living. But now, from the Braisa, it's very clear that we mean the covered of the mess. So the Gemara says no, because hachi kama, the Braisa may mean kol ha'oisa l'chvoydo shochai, whenever it's being done for the honor of the living, ain't be bizoyin l'mess, and there's no bizoyin to the mess in it. So the Braisa is not necessarily saying that these things are being done to begin with for the covered of the mess. It may mean they're being done for the covered of the living. But as long as that is, then it's not considered a bizoyan, because only when, for example, you have like the person was hanged and it seems like the body has been abandoned there entirely, would it be a bizoyan, but otherwise not. Okay, so the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring yet another proof. Rav Nosson Omer, and a Braiser Rav Nosson says, Simen yofel mes shenifroin mimenu. It's a good simen for a person who passed away, that he's punished after he passed through, that he's punished in this world after he passed away. Namely, mes shelo nispad v'lo nikbar, if the mess was not given a hesped or was not buried. Now, does that mean not buried at all? So Tosfos says that actually, yes, Tosfos says that not buried may literally mean that he actually was not, was that he was actually not buried at all. On the other hand, the number of Rishonim say the Shiltas from Rabbi Choy Goyen brings, and others bring that no, what it means is that not that he wasn't buried at all, but he wasn't buried with the kavod that he should have been. Interestingly, in one of the kinnis, in one of the kinnis of Tisha B'Av, where we talk about Jews who were killed by Goyim during the Crusades or whatever, and we mention over there how some of them unfortunately were never buried properly either. So it uses the expression based on our Gemara, Simen Tov La'Adam Shelo Nispad V'Nikbar K'Halacha, which can be kind of like both of them. It can mean like Tosfos that they weren't buried at all, and that itself is part of their kapara, and therefore they and their harugi the, as it is, as the Gemara is going to say further on, they're on a tremendously high level, having been killed al Kiddush Hashem anyhow. But on top of that, also it's a good simen that they weren't buried, or it can mean kalocha, they weren't buried the way they should, where unfortunately they had to bury them very quickly rather than giving them the cover that each of them would deserve individually. Anyway, so Rav Nosson says so if he wasn't nispad v'nikbar, so whether it means not nispad or not nikbar at all, or whether it means according to the covered that he should have had, or shechaya gerirato. Another possibility would be if a wild animal dragged away the body. And here also, you have different understandings. Do we mean that the wild animal dragged away the body and therefore it was never buried? Or do we mean it dragged it away, but then they were able to recover, then they were able to recover the body and bury it properly after all? Another example would be when it's raining on the mitzvah. So here they're burying him and then it's raining on him, which is something of a bezoyin. So all those kinds of things, Reb Nosson says, there was simen yofel mess. All of these are a good simen for the nifter that now it helps towards his kapara. So we clearly see from this that so we clearly see from this that all of it is a matter of covered for the mess. Because that's what we're saying. It's a good siman for the mess that he doesn't have that full covered that he otherwise would have. So Shmamino, the Gemara says, okay, well, that proves it, therefore. Mishum Yakra Deshachlihu. So we clearly see, therefore, that the whole matter is a matter of the covered, of the mess himself, rather than of the living. To be sure, we did mention before, for example, when Rebbe says they should give the hesped in the bigger cities, how does that fit with that? Rebbe is certainly not concerned about his own kavod. So with that and some other examples, the Chasam Sofer says fine, but there's the kavod of their Torah is involved. So that's why they insisted on this. But basically, we see it's covered for the mess. Shmamina, so that proves it. So therefore, in other words, if the mess says that that he doesn't want them to make a hesped for him, then in fact they don't. So as I said, Minhag Chabad in general is we don't do a spadim by Levayas, but even in the Velt where we do, every so often you hear stories of Gdolei Yisrael who didn't want that they should make a hesped for them because they didn't want all that covered. There are some examples though where people would say by the way the Talmidim or whatever would say by the Levayas that listen, you know, they said we can't make a hesped, but that doesn't prevent us from crying for him, and they would do that. Anyway. Okay, so the bottom line is it's covered for the mess. So that answers our question before. If he said, "Don't be maspid me," then we don't. Then we don't have to. And as far as if he didn't say that, on the other hand, and the Yoshim say, "Well, we don't want to spend money for it," then nevertheless we require them to spend money for it because it's part of the covered for the mess. Okay. The Mishnah had gone on and said, "Loi hayu kovrin chola." We said when a person was executed by Beis Din, they wouldn't bury him together with his ancestors. Rather, we said Beis Din had two bate kvaros set aside, one for people who got skila and sreifa, the other for people who got hereg and chenek, and they would bury them there for a while until the flesh decayed, and then they would rebury their bones together with their ancestors. So the Gemara says, "V'chol kach lama." Why are we going to that extreme that we don't even bury him right away together with his ancestors? And the answer is Lafisha in Kovrin Russia, Eitzel Tzaddik, because we don't bury a Russia next to a Tzaddik. Where do we learn that from? The Amr of Acha Bachanina, Minayan chain Kovrin Russia, Eitzel Tzaddik. How indeed do we know that concept? Shenemar, you have a Pasuk like this. It describes how Elisha had passed away and they buried him. Then the Pasuk describes how every year after that, bandits from Moav, groups of bandits, groups of terrorists from Moav would sneak across the border and would grab whatever they could. So the Pasuk describes how one time, Vayihem Kovrim Ish, it says one time there were people burying someone, Vehine Roas Agdud, and they saw such a band of armed Moavim, and they were frightened. So they threw the man's body into the caver of Elisha. The man touched the bones of Elisha, and he became alive, and he stood back up on his feet. Now Rashi explains this fellow was a Rosha. In fact, Rashi identifies him as the very same Navi Sheker that we find earlier in Sefer Melachim. Like this, we have this story with Elisha and this guy who was revived is in Melachim Beis Perek Yud Gimel. In Melachim Aleph Perek Yud Gimel, which is sometime earlier, you have a story over there where Hashem sent a Navi to go and tell Yerovam that what's going to happen if he doesn't do to warn him that he better do tshuva from the Egle HaZahav and whatever. And then afterwards, to make a long story short, a false Navi living in the city over there convinces the true Navi to come eat with him, and then the true Navi was severely punished for it. So now Rashi explains that this false Navi who caused all of that was still alive a long time later in Elisha's times, and he's the one who, when they were burying him, that his body had touched Elisha's bones, and then he right away had Tchias HaMeisim. So why? Because he's a Rasha, because he doesn't deserve to be buried next to a Tzaddik. So now, not everybody agrees. I mean, Marcha. So Marcha points out about that. That wait a minute, we know that that false Navi was buried taka next to Edo, next to that true Navi whose death he had caused. So there you have a Rosha being buried next to a tzaddik. So why can't he just as well be buried next to Elisha? So he says because eventually when they buried him next to Edo, it was only the bones. So whereas over here it was a fresh body. So therefore it couldn't happen. Different answer though. Maratz Chayes says that actually the Rosha that we're talking about over here, he brings from the Yerushalmi that this Rosha was actually Micha, the one of Pesel Micha. So yes, he lived for a long time. The Gemara later on in the Masechta mentions he did have a tremendous schus of he was a big Machnas Orach, but nevertheless he was a Rosha and he doesn't deserve to be buried next to Elisha. So the Gemara asks, Omale Rav Papa. So Rav Papa says, how do we know that that's proving that you can't bury a Rosha next to a tzaddik? The Dilma le'ikyuma v'hina pishnayim beruchacha elai. Maybe this was necessary in order to be Mekayim. Elisha had asked before Eliyahu was taken up to Shemayim, he asked him, let me have a double portion of your spirit. Which and then Elisha and Eliyahu said, if you see me being taken up to Shemayim, then yes, that will happen. And in fact, therefore, Elisha did have that. So therefore, Elisha had to do two. So first of all, Elisha did twice as many nisim as Eliyahu. We have eight nisim of Eliyahu recorded in the Psukim. We have 16 for Elisha. But also, then we know that Eliyahu revived one person, and namely the Ben HaIsha HaTzarfasis. He's staying in Tzarfas there with this Almana and her son, and the son became very sick and almost died, and Eliyahu brought him back to life. So now with Elisha, we have something similar with the Ben Ashunamis, but that's only one. He needs to have two. So therefore, you could say this is the second one. This was done in order to be Mekayim that he should be reviving a second person. That doesn't show that it's because the guy was a Rosha and shouldn't be buried there. Omale, sort of Acha answers, Ihochi, if so, Heinrich Tanya, then what about this that it says in a Braisa, Al Raglav Omad Lovesele Holach, Ovesele Holach. He stood up on his feet, this guy. It says, Vaichiva Yokam Al Raglav. But he never actually went home, meaning he revived long enough to climb out of the caver, so he's not buried next to the tzaddik, and then he right away died again. If it was a matter of that it's being done as a second nest of Tchias HaMesim that Elisha should accomplish, then it should be like Eliyahu's Tchias HaMesim, and like Elisha's first one with the issue with the Ben HaIsha HaShunamis, that he would live long term. So therefore, Rav Acha says, you see from that it was a Rosha, and the only reason for him to be revived was just momentarily, so he's not buried next to the tzaddik. Now, but with this said, by the way, there is a different medrash actually that brings a whole different explanation. There is a medrash that says, on the contrary, Pirkei de Eliezer brings that actually this guy who they were about to bury and then again they dropped him in Elisha's caver and so forth was actually a tzaddik named Shalom ben Tikva. Later on, we find him in Jewish history. He was the husband of Huldah HaNaviyah. And he was a tremendous Goymo Chesed. So now, by his Levaya, there were a large number of people by his Levaya, and then they all ran away when they saw this band of armed bandits. And then he had Tchias HaMesim, according to Pirkei de Eliezer, it was a long-term Tchias HaMesim. Hitaka became alive and remained alive, and later on even had children and so forth. But here are Gemara, so therefore, according to that, it's not a proof of anything about Rosh HaEtzel Tzaddik, because on the contrary, he himself is a Tzaddik, and he was Zeuchet to Tchias HaMesim, but the Gemara over here rather is taking it that this person was a Rosh and he was revived only so he's not buried next to Elisha. So the Gemara says, Elavi, he not pishnaim hechemashkachas la da'achya. Well, then where do we find that Elisha revived another mess? If it's just a matter of that this guy was revived for this purpose, then that doesn't count as another tchias emesim. And the answer is, Omale Rabbi Yochanan, sheripe tzaras Naaman, because he cured the tzaras of Naaman, and a metzora is choshuv kames, fishkola kames. Dichtiv, as we find when Moshe is davening for Miriam, al notzehi kames, Unless he can mess, let her not be like a dead person. So we see it's a person with tzaras. The Gemara mentions elsewhere that one of those four types of people who are considered like dead, and one of them is a metzora. So therefore, when Elisha cured Naaman of tzaras, then it's like bringing him back alive again. Okay. So the Gemara continues, Uchshem she'en kovrin Rosha etzal tzaddik, in the same way that we don't bury a Rosha next to a tzaddik, kach en kovrin Rosha chomer etzal Rosha kal. The same way we don't bury a more severe Rosha next to a less severe Rosha. So even if both of them are Roshoyim, but one of them is more of a Rosha than the other, one of them is a much greater Rosha than the other, then nevertheless we still don't bury them together. And so, as we see from as we see from our Mishnah, that they had separate cemeteries for those who got Skila and Srefa versus for those who got Hereg and Chenek. So the Gemara says in that case, Vlitkun Arba Kvaris, then in that case they should have four different cemeteries because there were four Mrs. Basin. And the answer is Shnei Kvaris Gemara Gemirila, because we have a Kabbalah from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's part of Halacha Moshe Misinai that there are only two. That even though logically, yes, there should be four, but Halacha Moshe Misinai is that in fact there were only two. One for Skila and Srefa, one for Hereg and Chenek. This point that we say that in Kovin Russia it's a tzaddik, so it's brought in the Noisi Kalim on Shulchan Aruch, bring that lachatchila you shouldn't. But b'dieved, then you don't give, then you don't move him. An interesting point actually that Rav Moshe deals in one of his Trubas with the situation. Now we're also not allowed to bury Jews next to goyim, so there even b'dieved you should move the body. However, Rav Moshe also writes in a Truva that he says if the situation is where the only way they'd be able to move the Jew's body is only if they cremate it, then he said then not the not cremating the body overrides that. So then you would leave him. Then you would have to leave him buried next to the goy, even though normally you don't do that. But here b'dieved he was buried over there, and you can't move him without doing a further bizoyan to him of cremating the body, then you don't do that. And there are different dinim in this regard that are brought in Shulchan Aruch and the Sekelim about who should be buried next to who. The Gemara says, so now we're going to discuss a new topic which is going to relate back to what it says in our Mishnah. Omer Ula Omer Rabbi Yechanan. Ocho chalev, suppose a person ate chalev or did any other aveda that would make him chayev achatas, we did it b'shoigig, v'hifrish korban, and he set aside an animal for his korban, v'heimir dosoi, and then he shmadzich, rachman al-tzlan. So now, as a mishumud, or otherwise known as a mummer, he's not allowed to bring a korban. We don't accept a korban from him until he does tshuva. So now v'chazer boy, then he does tshuva. So Rabbi Yochanan says hoyov nidcha, since the korban has already been pushed off, since there was a period of time when that korban became unusable because of this yidacha, then it remains pushed off, and therefore he can't use that animal for his korban when he does tshuva. And now he wants to bring the korban for his original aveda of eating chalev. He's going to have to designate another animal, says Rabbi Yochanan. Tosfos points out, actually, you could also have the case, it would be similar, if he designated the animal while he was a mummer. The reason the Gemara doesn't mention that is because as a mummer, usually he wouldn't do that in the first place. But yeah, the same thing. And Itmar Nami, then they said also, a similar din, Omer Rabbi Yirmiya, Omer Rabbi Abahu, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Ocho Chelev, if he ate Chelev, the Hifrish Korban, and designated a Korban, Vinishtata, and then he went crazy. And he also can't bring a Korban then, because the Korban has to be brought, Luritzoinai, the Pasuk of the Korban has to be brought with his knowledge, with his Ratzon, and you can't, because he's a Shoiter. So again, then he became normal again. Same thing. Says Rabbi Yechanan, Hoyov Nidcha Yidacha, once the korban has been pushed off and is not usable anymore, then it remains pushed off. And now, when he's normal again, he would have to designate a different animal as a korban. So the Gemara says, why do we need both dinim? Utsricha, we need Rabbi Yechanan to be telling us both dinim. De'i Ashmin and Kamaisa, if he only told us the first case where he shmadzich, then you would say, you know why the korban becomes posel and can never become usable again is mishum de'ihu docha nafshi b'yadayim, because he pushed himself off b'yadayim. He himself voluntarily went and became a mishumad. But when it comes to the shoyte, the memela kadochi, he didn't do anything. He became a shoyte. Something snapped in his brain. He didn't do it. Ema kiyoshin dummy. So maybe you would say it's the equivalent of as though he was sleeping. The same way. Now Tosfos learns that it's true that we don't necessarily mean that when he's sleeping, you could bring a korban on his behalf. Rashi actually says that when he's sleeping, then yes, it's true. After all, you can't bring the korban when he's sleeping, but nevertheless, when he wakes up, you can bring it. Tosfos, on the other hand, says that no, when he's sleeping to begin with, you could bring his korban. After all, we find a din in Masechta Gittin that a person sends a korban from overseas. You can bring the korban even though you don't know obviously whether he's awake or asleep at the time. But it means, in other words, that a person wakes up automatically, in the same way over here, a person eventually may naturally recover from his bout of insanity. So there's that, just that would be the comparison. The Yad Ramah actually brings that maybe in fact there's no proof from that Gemara in maybe there's no proof from that Gemara in Gittin, because you could say they bring it at a time of day when people are not normally sleeping. You look up what time is it, where the person is, and you make sure you don't bring the korban during that time. In any case, the point is that you would have thought that with a shoyter maybe you don't have that issue because at worst it's considered like he's sleeping. So we need to be told the case of the shoyter as well. The Iyashmein and Hocha, but if we were only told about the shoyter, you would say Mishum de'en v'yodeh lachzer, because he doesn't have in his control to become normal again. Aval hosam de b'yodeh lachzer, but the mummer who is able to do tshuva, Emaloi, maybe it shouldn't be a problem. Tzricha, so therefore, Rabbi Yochanan needs to tell us in both cases that the same din applies, that the korban is not considered nidcha, that the korban is considered nidcha, and therefore that he'd have to bring a different one. So the Gemara says, Afan Omer Rabbi Yosef, Afan nan nami tanena. So Rabbi Yosef says, you can in fact prove this from a Mishnah at the end of our Masechta, when we talk about the dinim of an Ir HaNidachas. Now we know all the property of the Ir HaNidachas has to be destroyed, but the Mishnah says over there, Hoyu ba kodshim, if in the Ir HaNidachas there were animals of kodshim, now you can't bring them as korbanos, because again, the people over there are the people over there are Rishoyim. They worship Avodah Zarah, and we don't want their korbanos. But what do we do with it? Kodshim is beach. If the korbanos that was supposed to be brought on the mizbeach yomusu, then we leave them to die. We lock them up in a room and have them die. Kodshim bedek abayis. But if they're only kodshim a bedek abayis, they were never meant to be brought as a korban in the first place. Yipodu. Then we can redeem them, and then they're mutar b'hanah. Although the Meiri brings another possibility that it means they're still also b'hanah. We would have to redeem them, and then we burn them. The point is that when the Pasuk says by the Ir HaNidachas, it says you have to burn es kol shlala, all of the spoils of the city. We learn from that v'loy shlal shemayim. You don't have to burn things in there that belong to Hashem. Kodshim, whether we're talking kodshim mizbeach or kodshim bedek habayis, belong to Hashem. So therefore, we have to have different dinim with them. Anyway, v'havinan ba. So now Rabbi Yosef says, so we pointed out, we discussed on that braisa, amai yomusu, why would the kodshim mizbeach have to be left to die? Kiven de iktul havalahu kapara. Wouldn't we say once the people who from the Ir HaNidachas themselves are killed, then they've had a kapara? V'lisku l'gavoya, and now we should be able to bring those korbanos to Hashem, because now the people had their kapara. Which, by the way, now Tosfos says, wait, later on the Masechta, it says the people of the Ir HaNidachas ein lam chelek l'olam haba. Tosfos says that would be if they weren't executed, if they were an Ir HaNidachas and they ended up living out their life without being executed, then they lose their chelek l'olam haba. But if they're executed, the Gemara is saying that they get their chelek l'olam haba, just like anybody else who's executed by Beis Din. And yet we say that we don't bring these animals as korbanos. Lav mishum damrin and hoyov nidchu yidachu. Isn't this a proof for what Rabbi Yochanan says, that because the animal was pushed off, because there was a period of time when the animal was unavailable, disqualified for a korban because the owner was a mummer, then therefore it remains yidachu even after the owner was executed. So you see a proof for what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. But Omale Abaya misavret mes mitachrusha havi le kapara. You're thinking, says Abaya to Rabbi Yosef, that if the person dies still as a rosha without having done tshuva, you're thinking that his misa alone would be a kapara. No, says Abaya, mes mitachrusha havi le kapara. No, you could say that if he dies or is killed still as a rosha, not having done tshuva, then it's not a kapara for him. And therefore, you could say he's still a rosha, and therefore you still can't bring his korban. That doesn't show that if they had done tshuva and then they were executed, maybe you would be able to. And in fact, Abaya says the toni of Shmaya, as Rav Shmaya teaches a brisa, that when we know that a koyan is allowed to become tomei for his close relatives. But the Braisa says Yochol afilu pirshu avoyis of midarchet tzibur. You would think that that applies even if his relatives have left the way of the tzibur, meaning that they've shmadzich. So Tama, you would think the Koyan can still become Tomei for them. No, Tamad Loima, therefore the Pasuk says, Ba'amav, the Pasuk says he can't become Tomei for anybody except for his relatives, Ba'amav among his people, from which we learn, Ba'oisim Maisa Amav, so it applies only when the relative is acting in the way of his people and not when he's a Meshumad.
So therefore, so we see, says Abaye, we see if the guy dies still as a Meshumad, then we see his he's not considered Oisem Maisa Amcha, and it's not a Kapara for him. Well, very well, that's what we're talking about over here with the Irani Dachas as well. But Omale Rava, but Rava says to Abaye, Mi Kamadamas Nereg Mitechrisha, the mess Mitechrisha. How are you comparing when he died, when he was killed by others, still as a Rasha, versus where he died naturally as a Rasha? Mess mitoch rishoy. Wait, you're talking about the Kohen with his relatives. Fine, but they died naturally. Kiven deki orche kamayas, he died naturally. Loi havile kapara, then you could say that his death is not a kapara for him. He died as a rosha, he never did tshuva, therefore you can say he's not oisa maisa amcha, and even his relative, the Kohen, shouldn't be metame for him. But, continues Rava, nerag mitoch rishoy, but if he was killed still as a rosha, whether by Beis Din or whether, as we're going to say, by Goyim, given the lav ki urchi mayis, the fact is he died an unnatural death. Havi ole kapara. That alone should be a kapara for him. So then, in that case, we should argue that. So we should argue that yes, the people of the Irani Dachas, even though they were killed, because they were killed, that itself should be a kapara for them, and therefore their animals should be able to be brought as a korban. So why don't we? It must be like Rabbi Yosef said originally, because to begin with they were nidche, because there was a period of time during the life of these animals when they were unavailable for a korban because their owner was a rosha, and therefore even after their owner was killed, yes, he has a kapara, but nevertheless the animal still stays in a status of nidche. So Rava continues, Teda. So again, you can say when he was killed, when he died an unnatural death, even though it was a Rosha, nevertheless, that would be a Kapara. Teda, Rava says, I'll bring you a proof. Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Tehillim, Mizmor La'asef, Elikim bo goyim menachosecha, Hashem, goyim have come into your heritage, into the Beis Mikdash, Timu es heichal kodshecha b'goyimer, they've defiled your holy Heichel, and the next pasuk of the Gomer, and the next pasuk continues, Nosnuas Nivlas Avodecha Machal Oifashamayim, they've left the dead bodies of your servants as food for the birds of prey. However, for the birds of the heaven, Besar Chasidecha, and the flesh of your Chasidim, L'chaisei Oretz, for the wild animals. So what's this expression, Avodecha and Chasidecha? My Avodecha or my Chasidecha? Lav Chasidecha, Chasidecha Mamash. Shouldn't we understand that chasidecha means the actual chasidim, the people who actually were mekayim mitzvahs the way they were supposed to? Avodecha would be hani de mechayve dinim meikra. The avodecha then would refer to the people who didn't serve Hashem during their lifetime. They were Rishoyim, but now they were Chayav Misa, the Kiven de Iktul, but once they were killed, Kori Lahu Avadecha, then the Pasuk is calling them your servants Hashem. So therefore we see that a person was killed and died an unnatural death, then that itself is a kapara for them, and therefore they're now considered, now they can be considered Avadecha. In fact, Maor Shor says that that's why the expression by Avadecha is Machal Oif HaShemayim. That they're being eaten by the birds, by the birds, because as we learned previously, we said that the people who are chayav misa when based in can't do it, then Hashem deals with it in the various ways. A person is chayav skila gets this kind of death. A person is chayav sefer gets that kind of death, etc. Now you have some people, as we learned, people who get skila also are hanged, and that's when the bodies would be eaten by wild birds. So you could say that that's why. So the pasuk by saying avodecha means that these people, even though in their lifetime they were a shoyim, but nevertheless, now that they got killed or otherwise died unnaturally, then therefore they're considered avodecha. Amalei Abaya, but Abaya says mikom adamis haruge malchus haruge beistin. Fine, but are you trying to compare people who were killed by a goyish government versus people who were killed by beistin? The Irani Dachas, after all, are being executed by beistin. Haruge Malchus, given to Rishloi Bedin Kamikdali, when it comes to people executed by the government, they're not being executed because of din. The goyim are being cruel to them, and they're going killing them without a din v'cheshbon, or without what would be considered a proper din of the Torah. Havilahu kapora. So yes, you could say that's considered a kapora. I agree that such people are considered avodecha. Which of course is very negeya in our times. It means, for example, people who were killed by the Nazis, yimach shemam, people who were killed by Arab terrorists nowadays, yimach shemam, etc. All such people were saying over here in the Gemara that just the fact that they were killed by goyim itself is a kapara for them, because they were killed without a proper din v'cheshbon. But continues Abaya, Haruge Beistin, Kibin de Din Kamikli. When a person is executed by Beistin, they're being killed according to the Din. Beistin went through all the procedures before they killed them. Loi Havilahu Kapara. And Abaya says you can argue it wasn't a kapara for them just by itself, unless they did tshuva. Teda, and now comes the relevance of this to our Gemara over here. Abaya says, I can prove it. The Tanan, after all, we said in our Mishnah, Loi hoyu kovrin oisa b'kivris avoisav, we said a person was executed by Beis Din, they wouldn't bury him together with his ancestors until the flesh decayed. Now, says Abaya v'isakadaitach, kivin de iktul havilu kapara, if you're going to tell me, Rava, that there's no difference any time a person died unnaturally, it's kapara, well then, likbru, then why shouldn't they be buried together with their ancestors? So therefore, yes, I agree with you, Rava, that if they were killed by Goyim is one thing, but if they were killed by a Beis Din, then you can't say it's not yet, they haven't had their kapara. Well, therefore, by the Irani Dachas, therefore, that's why you can't bring the animals as korbanos, even after the people of the Irani Dachas were executed. Not because like Rabbi Yochanan was saying, because kiven de idche idche, but rather because it's still considered nidche, because they have not yet had their kapara, they're still considered Rishoyim. So the Gemara says that's not really a proof, because you could say miso kvura be'inim. Maybe you would say the complete kapara of the person executed by Beis Din is that he has to have been killed by Beis Din and that he has to be buried in one of these temporary cemeteries together with the other Rishoyim. And you could say until that takes place, the kapara is not complete. So yes, we would say, after all, with the korbanos, hayov nidchu yidchu, but it doesn't show that the people have not had a kapara. Maybe indeed the kapara is only completed after they're not only dead, but also after they're buried with bizoyan like that. Well, the Gemara says Moisiv Rav Ada Ba'ava. So Rav Ada Ba'ava says in that case I have a contradiction. The Mishnah continued, Loi hoyu misablin. We said that the relatives of the person killed by Beis Din are not doing avelos, they're not sitting shiva, because we said that's a covered for the mess, and the mess doesn't deserve that kind of covered. Ela oininin, but they have the state of aninus, the fact that on the first day, on the day that their relative was killed, then they're mournful and they're sad in their hearts and they're potter from certain mitzvahs, etc. So she'ein aninus ela b'lev, because the concept of aninus is basically only in the heart. Now, v'isakudaitach kiven de'ikbu havelu kapara. If you're going to tell me that once they're buried they have a kapara, why should the relatives not do shiva li'ablu? Let them actually sit shiva for them. And because once the person is dead and buried, then his kapara is complete. Then at that point they should be able to sit shiva for him. And yet the Mishnah is saying that they don't. So doesn't that prove, therefore, that he still doesn't have his kapara b'chlal, having been executed by Beis Din? He still doesn't have his kapara, like Abaya said. And the answer is no. We could say, but in a nami equal bosser. No, because you could say it's not enough that he was executed, not enough that he was buried together with the Rishoyim. You also need a third factor, that the flesh decays. So therefore, by the time that happens, already the time of Avelos is long over. So the Gemara says, in fact, De Kanami, yeah, we can prove that from the Mishnah. De Katoni, we said, Nis'akol abosso, once the flesh decayed, Malakta Nisat Somos, and we gather the bones of Kovrinos and Mimkoimon, and we do bury them where they should go, together with the guy's family. Shmamina, that shows that at that point already the Kapora is complete, and now it's not a problem, like we learned on Amud Aleph, of burying a Rosha next to a Tzaddik. Now we're able to bury them together with their relatives, because Now their kapara is complete and they're not Rishoyim anymore. So it comes out basically, okay, but we're not done the discussion yet. Rav Ashi brings another explanation. Avelus me'emasai kamaschelas. After all, consider, when does Avelus first take effect? When do the relatives start shiva? Mistimas ha-goylol. Once the goylol is closed up. Now, what is the goylo? Rashi, in many places, explains that it means basically the cover of the arayin. So Rashi explains, you have like all over Shas, you have the words goylol and doifik. So Rashi always explains that the goylol means the cover, means the lid of the arayin, and the doifik means the sides of it. Tosfos discusses this at some length and gives other explanations. One point is that the goylol might mean the word, that the goylol would mean the Matseva. One interesting point that some people make, we find in various places in the Gemara in those times, we learned from this in Bava Basra, for example, they would often bury mason in niches carved into the wall. And then they would like literally roll, girdle means literally to roll, they would roll a large stone in front of it to prevent the mess from sliding out, and then they would have a derfik, which would be basically like chucks under the girdle to prevent it from rolling away. So the girdle might be that. In any case, when the girdle is closed up, then Avelus begins. Kapora, but Ravashi continues, Kapora me'emas kahavya. At what point does the Kapora begin, though? Miki chozu tsaira de kivra purta. As soon as the mess sees the tsar of the caver a little bit, as soon as he's a little bit of time in the caver. So, and only then we're going to say that then is the Kapora. So, in other words, that's some time, a little while after Stimas HaGurl. Ilkach, so therefore, Hoyol v'idchu, once they were pushed off from sitting Shiva, Yidochu, then they get pushed off completely. In other words, Rashi is saying, yes, you can say that he has Kapara. You don't have to wait until the flesh is decayed, but you do have to wait until a short time after he was buried, and by that time already, once they couldn't do avelos for him up to that point, because he's still a rosha at that point and doesn't deserve that kavod, then later on, even though it becomes available to do that, then nevertheless we don't do that. So in short, we have three different opinions. Is it that the burial itself, according to Rava and according to Rabbi Yosef, the burial itself is machaper, according to Abaya? According to Abaya, not. And then we're saying that according to one version of Abaya, we would say once the flesh is decayed, then the kapara is complete. And according to Ravashi, once he's in the caver for a little while. And again, all of this is only when they were executed by Beis Din. When they were killed by Goyim, then we're saying that's a kapara for them regardless. An interesting point in this regard, we're saying that if the shiva was delayed, then we don't do it afterwards. But we have actually examples where shiva is delayed for one reason or another. One example being if the relative was a cotton at the time of the Missa, and later on he becomes a gadol during the Shiva. So and you also have cases called Shmur Rechoika, where a person hears Shmur Kroiva, Shmur Rechoika, where a person hears of his messes of the death sometime later. So there is quite a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of that. In those cases, in principle, Avelus could begin right away. You just have a side issue. Whereas over here, you're saying there shouldn't be Avelus at all because the person is a Rasha. So therefore, Ravashi finishes off. So the Gemara asks, Ihochi Lomali Iko Bosser. Well, in that case, according to Ravashi's understanding, if you're telling me that as soon as the mess has been in the caver for a short time, then already the kapara is complete, then why did the Mishnah say we have to wait until the flesh is decayed and then we take the bones and rebury them? Why not do it right away? And the answer is Mishum Delo Efshir, because you can't. Once he's been in the caver for a short while, he starts decomposing over there, and then at that point you can't really unbury the body. It would be a bigger bazillion for the mess, so therefore we have no choice but to wait until the flesh is completely decayed, and then we'll take the bones and rebury them. The Gemara starts a discussion as follows. I'm going to talk about the question of having hana from a mess. So the Gemara tells Kivre de Rav, the caver of Rav, have a shaklimene afora leish sabas yoima. They would take dirt from Rav's grave, and people would use it as a cure against a fever of one day. Which means Rashi says on the first day of a fever, they had an idea in those days that they would take some dirt from a caver, and particularly from the caver of a tzaddik, and they would use it to cure that kind of fever. Also, Omer Leila Shmuel, they came and told Shmuel to ask if this is allowed. Shmuel, the Rav Shura Gaon, tells us that Shmuel outlived Rav by 7 years. So they came and asked him if this is allowed. Omer Lehu, he answers them, Yos Avdin, what they're doing is correct, it's fine. Karka Olam Hu, because the dirt on Rav's caver is general dirt. It's Karka Olam. It's the dirt that of the world. It's not something specific to his caver. But Karka Olam Ein an Aseres, and the dirt of the Karka Olam cannot become also over here. Cannot become also dichtiv, as we find a pasuk. Yoshiyahu is going through Eretz Yisrael and getting rid of all the vestiges of Avodah Zarah, and the pasuk describes that he took He took an Asherah and then other Avodah Zarah, and he ground it up. He threw the dust of the Asherah on the graves of the people, meaning these are people who had worshipped the Asherah during their lifetime, and now he's mevazeh them by throwing this dust on their kever. But we learn makish kever bnei ha'om avodas kechavim. We learn though that from this pasuk that there's a hekesh between kvarim and avodah zarah. Ma avodas kechavim mechubur le'mitzra. Now avodah zarah does not become oser while it's attached. Meaning, in other words, for example, a person were to worship an already planted tree. We'll learn about this more in Masechta Avodah Zarah, for example. Then it doesn't become Oseh B'Hanah. Or a person bows to an actual mountain, then it doesn't become Oseh B'Hanah. Dichtiv Asher Atem Yoshim Oseh Masalekeim Ala Horim Haramim. The pasuk says that you're going to be taking over the lands of the Goyim in Eretz Canaan. And you're going to be taking over the places where they worship their gods, Ala Horim Haramim, on the high mountains, from which we learn Al HaHorim Elekeim. Their gods are located on the high mountains, and you have to destroy those, but we learn from that the mountains themselves are not considered their gods. The mountains themselves don't become Oseh B'Hanah just because they worship them. Well, Hochanami, Mechubal Le'Mitzah, the same way, Shmuel tells them, here, the dirt over here is Mechubal Le'Karka, therefore it doesn't become Oseh, and therefore it's fine for them to take it for this purpose, for Hanah. So the Gemara says, Meisvi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, a chotz of kever la'aviv, a person carved out a grave for his father, but in the end he ended up burying. Now we're talking about he made the grave after his father passed away, because we're going to discuss in the Gemara later, we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, about the concept of hazmana. If you prepare something in advance to be available for a mess, it doesn't necessarily become Oseh B'Hanah because of it. But here we're talking about his father had passed away, and now he went and dug a grave. Eventually he buried him someplace else. Hareza lo yikaver b'yalamis. Then this son is never allowed to be buried over there because it became Oseh B'Hanah. So we see, in other words, that it becomes Oseh B'Hanah even when it's attached to the ground. Now, later on, the Gemara is going to point out that that's primarily with his father because of covered for his father. But at this point, the Gemara is assuming that it means that the kever itself is Oseh B'Hanah. So Tosfos also adds that, listen, if it was not going to be Oseh B'Hanah in the case of his father because of covered, if it wasn't going to be Oseh B'Hanah at all, we wouldn't add because of covered of his father that it should be Oseh where otherwise it wouldn't be. So the implication seems to be that it's Oseh B'Chlal B'Hanah. So the Gemara answer is no, because Hochab Maya Skinan, the Kaver Binyan. No, because we could be talking about a Kaver where he built something above ground. So there you could say, now that's not Karka Olam. It's not just a matter of being attached to the ground. It's a matter of he took stones and built a caver with it. That sure would be Oseh B'Hanah. What we're talking about over here is a caver that's dug into the ground. Does the dirt on top of that caver become Oseh B'Hanah? So we're saying that no. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, caver chodosh, mutar B'Hanah, a new caver, where they dug it to use for a mess when they need it, but still mutar B'Hanah. But hitul by nafel, but if he put into it even a stillborn child, so not even a full-grown mess, but only an unborn or stillborn baby, Oseh B'Hanah, then the grave becomes Oseh B'Hanah. So therefore, so you see that a dug grave is already Oseh B'Hanah. Not like Shmuel is saying. Again, the answer is Hochanami b'kever binyan. Here also you could say that it was built above ground. Just so we're saying built above ground, actually, there are explanations in Mefarshim that it means it was underground, but it was lined with bricks or stones, whatever. Okay, the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring from another Braisa. Nimsa ata omer, it comes out when you think as far as kvarim, what the dinim with them are. Kevin on nimsa, when you find a kaver in your field and you know that it wasn't there, that it wasn't that, you know you hadn't given permission for anybody to bury over there. And then you're working in your field one day and you find a kaver. So somebody apparently went and buried a mess there without telling you. The second one is kever hayadua. Then you have a kever that's known from before. You knew it was there all along. And the third one is kever hamazik haserabim, where it's harming the rabbin because, for example, it's on a road. It's underneath a road, and every time people are walking on that road, they're becoming tummy. And there's a difference between them as far as what you can do as far as to move the mess. When you just found it in your field and you didn't know it was there before, you're allowed to move it because then they didn't ask you for permission to bury the mess over there. And pinohu, and once you did move it, then the place remains tahor because you removed the whole mess and the place is mutar B'Hanah. We don't say because a mess was buried over there, it's also B'Hanah. The second one, kever hayadua, you knew that it was there before, osu lafanoiso, you're not allowed to move it because obviously you had given permission, you or your father or whatever had given permission, pinohu, and if you did clear it away, mekome tome, the place remains tome, because we're concerned, it's a gzeira d'rabbanon, because this way they won't move it. If he knows that, if he figures the place is going to be toher, then he's going to have an incentive to want to move it. If we tell him the place is going to remain tome, then anyway, he's going to say, why should I bother? So the place remains tome, and it's also bahana for the same reason. And the third one, kever amazik asarabim, where it's harming the rabbim, because, for example, people are becoming tome every time they walk by, mutal afanoiso, then you're allowed to clear it away, you're allowed to move the mess elsewhere, pinohu, and once you did, mekayme tahar, the place is tahar, but also bahana, but it's still also bahana, because then there's no reason to make it mutal bahana, the whole reason was just in order to remove the harm to the rabbim. Because in other words, Rashi says the Issur Hano would be Doraisa, so that we can't take that away. But to say Mekoma Tohar, there we don't have the reason to make Xera because you are validly allowed to move it. So the Gemara answers Hochanami Bekever Binyan. There also we can say that it means a built kever. The Gemara says, what do you mean? The kever animtza mutal of hanoisa. So what are you telling me? If you find it, you're allowed to move it. So again, in other words, there's no proof one way or the other from this braisa that a kever that's underground, that the dirt of it should be also bahana. But the Gemara asks a more general thing. What do you mean that when we said over here, the kever animtza mutal of hanoisa? What do you mean if you find it, then you're allowed to move the body elsewhere? Do a mes mitzvah. Maybe it was a mes mitzvah or mes mitzvah kona makoma. And we know the din that a mes mitzvah acquires the place where he's buried. So yes, you didn't give permission, but maybe it's a mes mitzvah. And the answer is you're not going to worry that it's a mes mitzvah because shiny mes mitzvah de kola islay. A mes mitzvah is a coil when it's found, and therefore it would be well known that this was a mes mitzvah. So if you don't have such a coil, then you can assume that it means that somebody buried him and they're over there without permission. And therefore, since it's your field and you didn't give rishus, then you're allowed to move the mess, and therefore the chacham are not going to be gozer tuma on the place or a lack of or an isser hana on the place because he was never koine in the first place. But in any case, we don't have a proof one way or the other from that a kaver should be also. And in fact, the din is, like Shmuel said, that the dirt of a kaver is mutar bahana. However, as we're saying over here, anything that's built on the kaver is in fact also bahana. If they build, for example, like you have the oil, let's say, then stones from that or whatever would be also bahana, but not the actual dirt itself on the kaver would be mutar bahana.